follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The top annual analysis of global arms sales found that France has risen to the number two weapons exporter in the world. The gains have often been made thanks to debt from Ukraine, which has become Europe's largest arms importer. French arms sales have soared 50% in recent years and now comprise 11% of the global market. The world's leading arms dealer is still the United States, which controls a record 42% of the global weapons trade. Arms sales to Ukraine has proven to be big business, and it may explain President Emmanuel Macron's about-face on the conflict. 2 years ago, Macron warned that Russia must not be humiliated, but he's recently become one of Europe's leading anti-Russia war hawks. France's top three arms clients are India, which is the world's largest arms importer, followed by Saudi Arabia and tiny but rich Qatar. Africa is still reeling from 40 tons of illegal free arms drops France made in 2011 to support anti-Gaddafi rebels in Libya. As predicted, the weapons soon found their way to Syria, the Central African Republic, Ukraine, and elsewhere. This week, French Parliament approved a 10-year military pact with Kiev, which guarantees billions in more weapons deliveries. Russia continues to gain ground against NATO-backed Ukraine, which is an important reminder that some weapons are made to work under actual wartime conditions, and some are made mainly for sales and profit. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
An unprecedented global movement gaining momentum. Initiated by veteran French lawyer and academic Gilles De Verre, the Army of Lawyers for Palestine now has over 200,000 lawyers of different nationalities on board and still counting as he travels from country to country to promote his grassroots campaign.
We are witnessing a new movement in the world. The atrocities committed in Gaza are no longer only a matter that concerns Muslim countries. Far from it. Here we have a French lawyer that has started an initiative that brought together 300 lawyers from across the world in less than 10 days, and that number grew rapidly to 100,000. And now with the MOU that we have signed at the Iran Judiciary Bar, that number will be rising to 50,000 lawyers. With Iran on board, you can also expect lawyers from Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon to join in as well.
And an optimistic Gilles De Verre, who has already filed a complaint of genocide against Israel with the International Criminal Court, demanding an arrest warrant for top Israeli politicians, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This is going to be a tough battle, without a doubt. But in just a few months, all these lawyers have joined us. This kind of solidarity is unprecedented. We have never seen so many lawyers join hands for one purpose in history. So this is a great sign, because it won't be enough to tell a judge, look, there's no many of us. Instead, we have to be able to defend Palestine with strong legal arguments. And by the looks of things, we have a solid base for that.
His South African fellow companion shedding light on the legal aspects of the matter while explaining how the case brought to the International Court of Justice by South Africa is also paving the way.
The ICJ order specifically spoke about creating a humanitarian corridor and a humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. The United States and Israel were saying that the word ceasefire did not exist in the ICJ order. But this is not true because the humanitarian aid on the ground at scale cannot be delivered without an effective and immediate ceasefire.
It is very clear that we are witnessing a birth of new age. A new movement of justice-seeking people from all over the world is emerging, and that is why while the South African government files a complaint, we see a grassroots movement also taking shape. A very unique one that has brought together lawyers who are seeking justice in the battle between good and evil.
And in the words of these legal experts, this goal is not far from reach.
Lawyers believe that we live in a new era in which this new global initiative will eventually lead to justice for Palestinians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
An annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader. But this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza, who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation.
The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria, the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed 31,000, more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the US government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community.
Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Britons treat their National Health Service, better known as the NHS, with an almost religious reverence.
Who grow up using the NHS from the cradle to the grave, free at the point of use. And that has tremendous significance for our lives.
But today, this eternal source of national pride is under increased scrutiny, with new figures showing more than 120,000 people died last year in England alone from delays in life-saving treatment. The NHS is a state-funded healthcare system founded in 1948. Back then, it cost around $20 billion in today's money to run. Last year, the government spent more than $181 billion. Despite that, more than 7 million people are now on the waiting list in England alone. That's nearly 12% of the population having to wait at least 52 weeks for a health consultation.
Our politicians aren't really serving the public interest. They are serving a neoliberal agenda, which is to transfer the country's natural assets and wealth to overseas corporations like United Health of America and other big multinationals.
The government has promised to cut the long queues, but has made little progress. The situation is no better in the rest of the kingdom. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, 1 in 80 people, and in Wales, 1 in 20, are having to wait more than a year for treatment. There's also the energy costs and inflation that has reduced the value of the NHS budget, meaning it now has to do more with significantly less. Add to the mix a shortage of staff, which means more pressure on exhausted employees.
We've had more than a decade of defunding since the financial crash. This has led to a real terms wage cut for staff. The whole population, the health needs have gone up. We have trouble keeping hold of staff. And we've also lost significant capacity with the NHS through privatisation. So we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough staff, and the staff we do have are being treated appallingly.
The health service is also coping with an ageing population. A large number of people now live with chronic conditions like heart disease and diabetes. The COVID-19 pandemic severely tested the NHS, with its aftermath still posing serious challenges. Health officials and experts warn for the UK's National Health Service to survive, the next government should declare it a national emergency. Saipur is at London.
India says it will enact the Citizenship Amendment Act that provides fast-track naturalization for multiple religious groups who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh and Pakistan before 2014. The law, however, excludes Muslims from those countries. Back in 2019, law's approval sparked deadly protests across the country and was halted since. The Muslim minority in India fears the government is using this law and other similar laws to widen crackdown on them.
India introduced this bill in 2016. With the aim of granting citizenship to what it calls a persecuted section of refugees. However, the bill has become one of the most controversial issues across the country since it excludes Muslims from availing citizenship. Critics accuse the ruling BJP of targeting a particular community on the basis of faith, which experts call unconstitutional.
Commentators also question the exclusion of persecuted religious minorities from other regions such as Tibet, Sri Lanka and Myanmar. India's Interior Ministry has said in a statement those eligible can now apply online for Indian citizenship. The issue has been one of the key pledges of Indian Prime Minister since assuming office in 2014. The new legislation makes changes to more than six decades old Indian citizenship law.
It's unfortunate for us that we are not part of this new law, despite the fact we have faced worse persecution any community has faced so far. We have still hope one day India will accept us on the ground of humanity.
Opposition political parties have accused the ruling party of influencing the elections, saying the move is to polarize the voters, considering its timing. More than 200 petitions challenging the law are still pending before the court of law.
We thank India they provide us shelter. It's an act of kindness, but we urge this country not to abandon us, knowing the fact we have seen deadly violence and persecution.
India, home to roughly 200 million Muslims, have recently seen targeted attacks and vicious hate campaigns. Critics accuse the ruling party of mixing religion with politics, resonating with India's majority. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Russia Navy warship, and China Navy warship. This is Iranian Navy warship 235. I call you on channel 16. Do you read me? Over.
The Maritime Security Belt 2024 has officially kicked off with Russian and Chinese vessels entering Iran's territorial waters south of the country on Tuesday. The naval and airborne units of Iran's army and the IRGC, along with their Chinese and Russian counterparts, will participate in various operations during this exercise. Naval delegations from Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Oman and South Africa have also taken part as observer states. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries as well as the observer states reviewed different phases of the exercise on maps and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of Iran, Russia and China held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
Upholding peace and security in the north of Indian Ocean and having a specialized cooperation in combating piracy and terrorism in our region are among the main goals of this exercise. We are constantly working to improve this cooperation.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security while also deepening their practical cooperation. 2024 is the fifth consecutive year that the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy is hosting countries participating in the Maritime Security Belt drills in the northern Indian Ocean region.
This year's naval drills have kicked off under the motto Together for Peace and Security, with participating countries highlighting the importance of jointly safeguarding regional security. Ahdiyab Bosyan, Konarak.
In the limelight.
In Britain, the price of petrol is up 3.2 pence a litre and diesel 4 pence a litre as fuel tankers are forced to avoid the Suez Canal and instead sail round South Africa's Cape of Good Hope. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The cost of filling up a family car in the United Kingdom increased by about £2 this month, as the jump in the oil price caused by the Red Sea attacks is felt at the petrol pumps. In the 3 weeks to 18th of February, petrol prices increased by 3.2 pence a litre to 143.4 pence a litre, while diesel prices rose by 4 pence to 152 pence a litre, according to the RAC, which said this was worrying for motorists. The financial pressure on petrol car drivers has been easing over the last 3 months, as the price had fallen back from 157 pence a litre to below 140 pence a litre in mid-January. This was the first time it had dropped below this figure since October of 2021, when the energy crisis began to escalate. The Russia-Ukraine war in February of 2022 then pushed up fuel prices to record levels in Britain. While the price of diesel had reduced by 15 pence from 163 pence in early October to just below 148 pence in late January, it was cheaper for much of the last summer. The pump price increases have been brought about by a jump in the price of oil, which has been trading above $80 a barrel for most of the past 4 weeks, having been well below that level for the previous 7 months. The Red Sea attacks by Houthi fighters in Yemen, which are forcing tankers to avoid the Suez Canal and instead go round South Africa's Cape of Good Hope, was one of the reasons for the increase in petrol prices, the RAC announced. However, the closure of refineries for maintenance, as well as Britain's retailers buying more fuel stocks before the budget to protect against a possible fuel duty hike, were also factors. Simon Williams, the RAC fuel spokesperson, said, "News that fuel prices have bottomed out and are now on the rise again is bad news for British drivers, and possibly the economy and future inflation rates too. While we're not expecting prices to shoot up dramatically, it appears that oil is trading up, which in the absence of a stronger pound means wholesale fuel cuts, more for retailers to buy in. The result is higher prices at the petrol pump for motorists and more expense for the everyday driver." The RAC does not expect forecourt prices to climb much higher but a lot depends on how much margin the biggest retailers decide to take, he said. Supermarket margins are lower than they were in January, but they are still significantly higher than they were prior to the pandemic and to the Russia-Ukraine war. British retailers have faced scrutiny over how quickly they pass on rises and falls in the wholesale price of fuel onto the customer. Last year, the government accused station owners of treating motorists as cash cows. To remedy the situation, it is forcing companies to provide live pricing data, allowing drivers to shop around more easily for the best deals available. The Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Petrol and diesel prices at Britain's forecourts have jumped more than 2% in recent weeks, according to data from the RAC motoring organisation. The gains have been triggered by the higher cost of oil internationally, which has been trading above $80 a barrel for most of the last 4 weeks. The Houthi fighters in Yemen have attacked ships in the Red Sea area and are forcing tankers to avoid the Suez Canal and instead sail around South Africa's Cape of Good Hope, increasing the journey considerably. From 29th of January to 18th of February, unleaded gasoline jumped by 3.2 pence a litre to 143.4 pence a litre, while diesel prices rose from 148 pence a litre to 152 pence a litre. Maintenance at oil refineries around the world is also supporting petrol prices, according to RAC's fuel spokesman, Simon Williams. Simon Williams added, "We ought not to see forecourt prices go up too much more from where they are today, but a lot depends on how much margin the biggest retailers decide to take for themselves."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. In this edition, a statement on Thursday, Hamas announced that it had put forth a new proposal for a ceasefire that also includes a prisoner swap deal. But while Gaza is looking for ways to end the war, word is out that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah, a city in Gaza that was expected to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. In this edition of Spotlight, we will be discussing the dire situation in the besieged coastal strip and Israel's true intentions in continuing the war. Our guests in this edition are Masood Shajare, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us live from London, and also Seb Shah, the author of West Asia and an expert, joining us from Belfast. Thank you very much to both of you, gentlemen. Let's begin with Mr. Masood Shajare. Mr. Shajare, we have just heard that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah. Now, this is a city that from the very beginning was deemed to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. That is according to Israeli sources themselves. Why is this happening now at this point in time when Hamas is putting forth a ceasefire deal, a prisoner swap deal, and is looking for ways to end the war?
Well, it's very clear that Israel, this Zionist state, from the outset was set to exclude Palestinians from that land, ethnic cleanse them, and by any means possible, and grab as much land as possible. But this particular government, in particular, it actually been committed to ethnic cleansing and genocide long before 7th of October, to the extent that there has been even conflict internally in this regime because of this policy. This particular government is committed to that. So we'll use any possible avenue, any possible opportunity to kill as many Palestinians, kill as many children, kill as many women. And in their eyes, the children of Gaza are the future Palestinians, and they need to be eradicated. They need to be killed. And this is why the policy since the 7th of October, which has been unleashed, it shows very clearly that they are targeting innocent civilians with a brutality, without any mercy, in front of TV cameras. And while the international community is watching, and at worst, United States and Western allies are equipping this Zionist state to kill most effectively, most brutally, and most systematically. This is not what is happening right now. The fact that Netanyahu wants to use this opportunity to kill as many people, innocent people, as many Palestinians, and ethnically cleanse the Gaza, is not a surprise, and it's not a new policy. It's been their policy, and they are pursuing it so openly and so publicly. And I think we need to wake up to this reality. Otherwise, this is going to go on and on, and you know, international community is just doing nothing and wishing for a change of policy, which is not going to happen without enough pressure being put on the Zionist state.
Well, Mr. Shajar, you raised some very important issues right there, but I would like to rewind what you said and go back to a part which is very important. You said all of this is happening in front of TV cameras and the international community is watching. So let's bring in our guest from Belfast, Mr. Shaath. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I hope that I do. But Israel is committing war crimes, crimes that have been defined by international law as war crimes. Israel has completely neglected what is known to be as the Geneva Convention, or what the ICRC itself claims to be rules for war. So what do you think the intention of Israel is by so openly neglecting everything that modern human beings believe to be the pillars of the modern society?
Let me just grasp the last statement you said. This modern civilized society which you're talking about, it's all fake and hypocrisy. It used to be used just by the West when they want to intimidate a country or impose sanction or just get their interest through. And the international law and international community and international organizations being formed after the Second World War, like the United Nations and these bodies, and Geneva even convention, and the special, the fourth article of it, and that it's all proven. Gaza is proved all of that was fake, and it was just hypocrisy. Since the United States of America, as they claim the leaders of the free world, which means the Western camp, they themselves, who showed us in Gaza, they pretend with this Zionist entity as their outpost, military post in there. And I want to say it's their banana republic in the middle of West Asia, which is the Zionists try to deny that, like Ben-Gvir when he said we are not a banana republic to the Americans. They are a banana republic in there, and they, without the support of the United States, without the money, without the funding, without the arms, they would disappear in weeks. And this is one point. The United States of America, who can open the land routes from Rafah or Kerb Abu Salem to bring the miles upon miles from aid waiting in the borders of Rafah, can do it with one phone call to order, not to ask, Netanyahu. And they would obey because they know without the United States of America, they can't. But Biden said there is no red line when he was talking about for Netanyahu, for the Israelis, means they can do whatever they want, and the United States of America can ask, pretend like they care for the Palestinians. Once they start this airdrops of aid, which is landed on top of people and killed seven at some stage, the United States of America drop a few parcels of aid on Gaza on this hand, and on the other hand, tons upon tons of ammunition going to the Zionist entity, supplying it. The same goes for the British, for the Germans, for the French, for Australia, for Canada. All these Western camps is becoming disgusted because they are involved in they are complicit in genocide now. If we can hear the rulings of the International Court about asking Israel to follow 1, 2, 3 steps and provide this report, and as well to take steps not to put the Palestinians' lives in harm way, and to allow the aid in, and telling the governments who supply the Zionist entity with a lot of with cash and with the ammunition and with that are complicit with it. This is clear, but none listen. Since the Zionist entity, they think they are shielded by this Western diplomatic shield from any organization to impose on it anything. We witnessed the United States of America use 3 vetoes against the ceasefire in Gaza to save the people in Gaza. They can 30% of the children in Gaza malnutrition now, and a lot of them dying from hunger and starvation. And we can see the roundabout of the Kuwaiti roundabout in Western Gaza become the call nickname, the flower massacres, since people go gather there waiting for any trucks to get them any kind of aid or flour to get to their starving children. The rest of their life, and a lot of them knows they can't go there and will not coming back but they have to do something for their kids. And this is all done at the watch of the United States of America.
Exactly. It's all happening under the watch of the U.S. And also, Mr. Shajareh, the U.S. also did some kind of what I would like to call a propaganda move to send some aid that at best can be described as a drop in the bucket, something that could only make some headlines for just a few days, sending some kind of meager amount of aid to Gaza, while it is supporting Israel by sending tons of weapons, all kinds of weapons that Israel needs, let alone, as our guest in Belfast just mentioned, all the support that it gives to the Zionist entity in the United Nations by vetoing any attempt for a ceasefire.
It really is outrageous. It is outrageous that this level of killing and brutality, it goes on. it's outrageous that no attempt is being made to stop it. And indeed, there is a veto taking place to make sure that it will not stop. There is a political cover for this Zionist state by United States and its Western allies to make sure that the killing will continue with its brutality and with its totality. And indeed, arms are being poured in free of charge. They're not even being, they're not even being sold to kill innocent people. Everybody knows what's going on. And indeed, let us not forget that the corridor for aid to go into Israel, to go to this Zionist state and feed not just the Zionists, but feed the war machine, is going through Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and Jordan. And, oil is going through Turkey. This is outrageous. It's outrageous because it's happening in front of the world population. We are seeing it day in, day out. I'm sick and tired of actually seeing this. I'm sick and tired of seeing myself and my family crying their eyes out in this month of Ramadan for human beings being treated in that way. And at the same time, United States claimed to be champion of democracy, champion of human rights, champion of standing for the weak ones around the world. And this is outrageous. It has to stop. Where is the democracy? 70 to 80% of Western nations' population is asking for ceasefire now, right now. And, these criminals who are in power, be it in Britain, France, Germany, or United States, are indeed ignoring their own people. And then they claim that this is a democracy. I think what is now is very clear that all the institutions that have been set up to stop these sort of brutal war crimes, be it United States, international courts, and so forth, are not fit for purpose. And we need to bring a change. And we need to bring a change not just in these international institutions, but citizens in Britain, France, Germany, and United States need to ask themselves, do they want this direction of going towards sort of jungle, law of jungle, people killing each other and being allowed to commit genocide in such an open way, or they are responsible to bring an end to it? And, they will put more effort. Already, I take my hat out to people in Britain, France, Germany, and others who are coming out in demonstrations day in, day out. But it needs to go far beyond demonstrations. We need to sort of say, enough is enough. And I think we need to demand that there has to be some justice prevailing at this 11th hour.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajara, and these grassroots campaigns have proven to be successful in inflicting heavy losses on corporations that support Israel. We've had McDonald's and also Starbucks announcing heavy losses. So, Mr. Shah, could you please tell us, in your opinion, could the same grassroots campaigns puts the same amount of pressure on their governments, who are clearly, against their people's will, are still supporting Israel?
I just came today from a massive demonstration in Belfast. I addressed it in front of the American consulate, and the people are outraged, and they're outraged at their own local politicians. In Ireland, they are outraged at the Irish Prime Minister and Irish leaders of the biggest political parties going in St. Patrick Day, which is the Irish National Day, to hand a shamrock to Joe Biden. And they say, you don't go and shake hands with genocidal Joe. and the people are disgusted with their leadership, with their political parties, often trying to implicit their political parties in supporting genocide by going and sitting with Joe Biden. That limit, it's a massive call for them to turn away from doing that. But tomorrow, the whole thing will be, so I don't think, the United States of America, even in the Congress, they issued a bill for banning or taking over Tok Tok, because they think it is, a lot of the youngs are getting their news from there, not from the mainstream media, because of Palestine, because of the what's going on in Palestine. They want only the lies comes from the Fox News or CNN or BBC to trickle to the people. They want to control them and make them sheep people. They don't understand the people are educated and they can think and make decisions for themselves. They don't want to keep bombarding them with lies, since studies says there is 80% of the people who read the news, they don't go to find out was it right or wrong to analyze. So they depend on that. And there is a huge industry in the Zionist entity in fake news and telling lies, since that entity itself was based on lies, religious lies, national lies, ethnic groups lies. Everything about that entity and its leadership, the Zionist entity, is lies. And the United States of America, I want to say to my friend, which pretending the leader of the free world and supposed to defend the, as you said, Mr. Shadri, the weak, they are not. And you know, and I know, they're the one who committed genocide after genocide in Vietnam. They're the one who killed the First Nation in America. They annihilated them. They're the one who destroyed a lot of countries in Latin America. They're the one who killed nearly 2 million Iraqis in Iraq under a couple of lies, which is proof, weapons of mass destruction and stuff like that, and is still stagnating the Iraqi economy and looting everything in there. They're the one who went in Syria under the cover of they want to fight Daesh, which they created, and they're looting the oil and the gas from Syria and destroying the country. They're the one who want to make sure the Zionist entity destroy Gaza and crying to Netanyahu, like the killing them softly, gently, as Biden said. It's disgusting, and it's about time. I agree with you, brother. The new order supposed to be emerging and learning, because Gaza exposed them all.
So, Mr. Shajara, in your opinion, how much power do these grassroots campaigns have, and can they put enough pressure on the governments? Or let's say, how far would these governments dare to go?
Well, I think what very clear that these governments, they have no morality, they're morally bankrupt, ideologically bankrupt, and you know, when it comes to law and order, they're bankrupt. But never before, until now, they were exposed the way that they're exposed now. It's true what happened in Vietnam, is true all the things that the brother is highlighting, but it's really just now that masses in West are waking up to these realities. And I think this is the beginning of the end of the influence of these politicians. These politicians have to be punished when it comes to the election. They don't fear anything else. They have no morality. They've got no common sense or dignity. They need to be punished on the ballot paper. And indeed, I think that's going to happen. And indeed, I think this, what we are seeing, this mass awakening that we are seeing right across Western world, be it United States, France, Germany, etc., etc., despite the fact that they are using sort of dictatorial policies to stop these demonstrations, to legislate to stop this demonstration, and to stop the voice of those who are standing up for justice and saying never again. But nevertheless, it's growing. It's growing by minute. It's growing by day. It's growing every month. And so I would, my response to your question is that this is not the end, but this is the beginning of the end of this sort of politics being used to con not just people in Western Asia and around the world, but conning their own citizens. And this awakening is going to matter, and its strength is becoming more powerful day by day.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajara. And just as Mr. Shath just mentioned, he has come back from a mass demonstration in Ireland. We have been seeing pro-Palestine demonstrations in countries that we would never imagine. And Mr. Shath, in your opinion, how far do you think these demonstrations can go? And we also live in the day and age of social media. So how do you think social media can also increase solidarity with the Palestinians and in order to bring a change?
In Ireland, there is similarities because they suffered colonial and they suffered the same thing. So there is a connection in the struggle. But as well, social media influencing big time, since the people get their news straight from the source. They get it even in Arabic from someone who's been his house or her house attacked, and they see the images and they see the starvation and they see the effect of it, and they cannot see any of that being even displayed on their own mainstream media. And one of the other things in here, which is I've been witnessing since from last November till now, the respect these demonstrations showing for the Lebanese resistance and mainly for the Yemeni resistance. It's amazing to see that and see how the people are proud to see there is a noble movement like the Yemenis and the Lebanese resistance or the Iraqi resistance coming to support the Palestinians, as they compare that to what Che Guevara done in the late 60s in Africa, in supporting the African against the apartheid and trying to fight. So there is a movement growing to dismantle. One of the slogans they saying, you have to dismantle this Zionist entity out of and take it out of this region. A lot of the youngsters